Okay, get your show voice on. That is definitely not what I was talking about. We are not an ASMR show.
I got a little secret for you. Welcome to CMN. I'm eating a piece of hard candy right now, and I want you to imagine that you're that little piece of hard candy crammed in my cheek. And I'm gonna bite down! I'm gonna bite it! I'm gonna bite the whole thing! Ah, you're in pieces!
Oh, God. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. I like that a lot.
I don't even know what the hell that was.
I don't know, but you almost clipped the mic, but it was beautiful. It was just like, little piece of hard candy. I'm gonna bite it!
Sulfur said, stand adamantly firm on the thunderbolt of the storm until all worlds ignited and into ashes befall. A young student seated on a sphere of radiance asked him what he meant by the sacred maxim. Sulfurus answered, when you will awake from this illusion of life, you will be as one with Aeon Sulfurus. And you will be one and C-M-N.
It shows that everywhere in the Gnostic continuum, mind is active.
And the Hermansen Club tended to be concerned with homosexual magic.
I'm looking reality in everyday life.
The magician assumes the form of a wolf.
In the solution of a philosophical problem,
Verdio stands unique in a spiritual world.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Estipid Miss Day Kennedy, and this is Chaos Magic News, the most rootinest, tootinest, shootinest, voodooinest, who-doing-this podcast on the occult sphere today. Joining me, as always, is the lowest of the low co-host, Baron of Bad News. How you doing, Baron?
The lowest. Oh, that is perfect. Perfect. Oh, boy. You knocked it out of the park. Man, we should just stop the show here.
Yeah, we're not getting any better than that.
We peaked.
I'm pretty sure people were saying that after episode 5.
No, I think they're just groaning after that. Oh, boy. I'm doing fantastic. I'm kicking it. I'm psyched. It's Saturday. It's a good time to be alive. It's a good time to be dead. It's a good time to be dead and then alive. You know, it's just whatever. We're talking about fake voodoo this week.
Well, we're talking about more than just fake voodoo.
We're talking about fake everything.
Well, you know what? I think this is an appropriate follow-up to the Castaneda special.
We have somehow run the gambit here. Like really, we started with And to be fair, the Lovecraft special was less about Lovecraft and more about what magicians did with it. But it's still this notion of the interplay between admitted fiction and quote-unquote real occultism.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Carlos Castaneda, which is, once again, the interplay of truth and falsehood. The notion of even if you think that Castaneda's work is entirely bunk, why do you get results? How does that, you know, things like that. And I don't even think Castaneda's work is entirely bunk, but we'll, you know, that's a line that
go
we
go listen
draw
to the Castaneda special.
Yeah, exactly. But for this special, oh, actually, and then Grant Morrison too, where
Grant Morrison, where was the extensive use of fiction as magic.
Yeah. So finally, for our 40th episode, we're gonna do someone we've hinted at, danced around, did all kinds of mentions and shout outs and love and hate for, but we're talking about, I'm trying to think of an appropriate title for him.
Well, I mean, you take your pick. The man's got a bunch of them.
You know what? We'll just say Mr. Michael P. Birdio.
Michael P. Birdio.
Michelle P. Brexits. Mikhail P. Brexins. Anyway, Michael P. Birdio is just
he's an enigma.
Yep. He's an enigma wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in a large bag of cultural appropriation or whatever you'd want to say. But I think for our listeners, if you don't know who he is, man, you're in for a treat. If you do know who he is, you either immediately shut off or you're going, oh, shit. And we are guaranteed to disappoint both parties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you really like him, you're going to be mad. If you don't like him at all, you're going to be mad. Maybe there's a couple folks that are that have our level-headedness. What can we say about Michael Burdio as a person? I guess biography will start off.
Well, I think I have an interesting little thing to go from here, right? Because we have we will call it maybe not the official biography blurb, but we have a biography blurb from Folger Press, if you know who they are. They're a fine publisher of occult books, including Burdio's. So let's just read the little blurb here and go from there. Michael Burdio, author of the famed Voodoo Gnostic workbook and the hierophant of the Voodoo Gnostic current, is a rare visionary in modern occult studies. Raised in a liberal theosophical household, he was drawn to the esoteric and spiritual approach to religion and being from early on. After studying philosophy in New Orleans and having been ordained as a deacon in the Anglican Church, Burdio was sent to Haiti in 1963, where he taught philosophy and was in charge of the local Anglican Museum. It was on the Magic Island that Burdio met his spiritist rector, Dr. Jean Main, who initiated him into the secrets of the Voodoo Gnosis. His close collaboration with Jean Main, first in Haiti and then later in Chicago, lasted until the Voodoo Master's death in the early 1980s. Returning from Haiti, Burdio found the Anglican clergy suspicious of his close ties with the Voodoo sorcerers, and slowly both parties drifted apart. With his church career coming to an end, he accepted an offer from the Theosophical Society to work and lecture at their headquarters in Wheaton, Illinois, outside Chicago. Soon thereafter, Burdio changed professions one last time to become a social worker, a career he would pursue until his retirement in the late 1990s. His subsequent move to Chicago would eventually reunite him with his mentor, Jean Main, who had been exiled from Haiti in the reign of President Duliver. Burdio stands unique in the spiritual world. His system of occultism and gnosis is unlike any other. Instead of reworking the occult past and clinging to classical theories, he works mainly on Gnostic radionic lines and esoteric creativity. Deeply rooted and based in the magical world and traditions of esoteric voodoo, a very elaborate and specialized form of voodoo taught to Burdio by his Haitian master, Burdio has managed to introduce a great number of other spiritual currents into his system and thus empowering it even further.
Let's parse out a little bit
Yeah, let's take a little bit here.
So this was a man who grew up in a theosophical household, became part of the Anglican Church, went to Haiti, met somebody who, as far as we can tell, is a real person. When I first read Burdio's stuff, I thought it was a Don Juan. I thought this dude was made up. Because it sounds like it. But it's like, yeah, I went to Haiti, and they just introduced me to all the voodoo stuff. But I mean, pay no attention to that. The voodoo that Burdio espouses bears little resemblance to actual voodoo that's practiced over in Haiti. But that's besides the point. He gets all this voodoo initiation stuff, goes back to America, changes career paths, becomes a social worker, that sort of thing. But more importantly, while he was doing that, he was still also like writing and doing lectures and forming societies and initiates. And it didn't even touch on the fact that he has his own branch of the OTO. Did it mention that he was in the Corunzon Club?
No, that didn't even... Well, it talks later on in the thing because there's more to this. But, you know, that is probably the most fascinating part of all of this is that Burdio claims to have lineage from
everyone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Everybody. Every fucking thing.
But specifically, this Hector Francois Jean Main, this Haitian gentleman that he knew, that he met over in Haiti, ostensibly, who has a sort of OTO. It's called the OTOA, the Ordo Templi Orientis Antiqua. And it goes along with another little organization called the LCN, which
is also French, I believe.
Right.
If I remember,
it's sort of the same.
The translation, I think, is the Black Snake or something like that.
Right.
Here's the kicker, too. So there's sort of this OTO that he's connected with. So that one, that indicates that Dr. Jean Maine was, might have had some kind of voodoo whatevers from being a Haiti native.
Allegedly, his voodoo practice comes from his family tradition, but he combines that with the supposed OTO connection, which is...
So before, I suppose that's the interesting thing. And again, to the best of our knowledge, this was a real person. So before Birdio even gets his initiation, before he even gets the voodoo stuff, it's filtered through somebody who has combined voodoo with Western tradition stuff. So it's like, if you remember the Castaneda special, the Weirdling article that we were reading, basically makes the case that that's possibly, if Don Juan were a real person, it makes the case that, like, perhaps it's actually a case of Don Juan's supposed teachers also had Western influence. Pretty out there speculation. But we can at least say with Dr. Jean Maine, this is somebody who was already combining indigenous, native, whatever. And that's the thing. Voodoo is already heavily syncretized. So for somebody who grew up in that and was immersed in it, it might have really been nothing. Might have really been nada to just be like, yeah, of course I'm going to combine the other spooky woo-woo with the spooky woo-woo I already have. That's a common practice.
Well, here's a little bit on the Ordo Templi Orientis Antiqua from someone that I genuinely love, Peter Robert Koenig, who is probably most well-known for writing a series of books called The OTO Phenomenon, where he has spent exhaustive amounts of time and research tracing the OTO back to its pre-Crowley origins, its Masonic connections, and all the sorts of offshoots that have developed since then. And for the most part, kind of just calls people out on their bullshit.
Well, there's a lot of it to go around.
Oh, yeah, so. There's plenty. It's not. But here's a little segment from his website called... Ordo Templi Orientis Antiqua, a Gnostic Inflation. Very first paragraph. The reader should bear in mind that there is almost no documentary evidence regarding the history of the OTOA. There is absolutely no trace of L.F. Jean Maine or his Gnostic Church, Memphis Mizraim, or his OTO version in any of the old French Gnostic periodicals. Apparently, the history of the OTOA and its tangle of related organizations was developed by Mark Lully, Michael P. Birdio, and Manuel C. Lamparter, and perhaps Kenneth Grant in the late 60s. Birdio admitted to me that his draft history was written based on notes by Mark Lully. These notes are said to have been lost since then. The following article is a reconstruction of the OTOA's self-styled draft history, available in the articles by Birdio and Lamparter, The Occult Digest, Volume 3, yada yada. Without spending too much time going through the whole of this, Gerald Incosse Papus was born in Spain. Jules Doniel founded the Gnostic Church. Doniel consecrated Incosse as a bishop. And then John Yarker, who was the head of the Rite of Memphis Mizraim, which is where the OTO comes from, dies. Supposedly, Incosse inherits the title. So now we get to Lucien François Jean Maine. So not Hector François Jean Maine, the person that we were talking about. This is a different one.
Is that a common name or are they related?
I believe they are related.
So like daddy?
Yeah.
All right. So it goes from him to Hector?
Yeah. And there's a lot of in between here about people setting things up and so on and so forth. And there's even a connection to the Fraternius Lucius Hermetica, which if you don't know, that's P.B. Randolph.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, P.B. Randolph, noted occultist, African-American, person that gets brought up a lot as the origin of much of the OTO sex magic.
Mm.
Interesting stuff. So once Papus, you know, Incosse dies, apparently the split in the OTO becomes the Royce-approved connections and then Jean Maine's, which is just kind of going on in Haiti, I suppose.
So it's the idea of, like, there's the proper descent and then this thing.
Right. But, of course, keep in mind, as we've said earlier, this is all just what Birdio and Mark Lully and all these people are saying is going on.
So when does Crowley even come into the picture?
Well, after all of this, when he gets connected to Royce.
That's the big question, right? That's the thing. So what Birdio, of all people, is claiming, his descent of the OTO, because Hector more or less turns it over to him, blah, blah, blah. He's the OTOA guy. Birdio is actually claiming that his OTO lineage predates Crowley's assumption of it, I guess, whatever right. you call it. How fucking wild is that? And this is like, and you got to remember that Birdio is what, doing this in the 70s?
60s.
60s, okay. So, but still, that's like, Crowley's been dead for decades now.
Birdio himself was born in the 30s, and Crowley died in the 40s.
That's what I'm saying.
So,
like, so, but meanwhile, his teacher is like, and I guess it's like, it's not totally absurd, but to think about how firmly the OTO is established as Thelema, and then also Birdio's writings on Thelema?
Well, yeah, it's actually interesting.
And his
OTO
isn't Thelemic.
Right. From another article that Koenig wrote, we have the date that the OTOA supposedly accepted the law of Thelema.
That's bizarre.
Which, you know, again, think about it, because that's what happened to the OTO. The OTO starts as just a sort of Masonic compendium. It doesn't accept the law of Thelema until well after.
That's really, okay, that's very odd.
So, okay, just to simplify it to make sure everyone's with us now. John Yarker dies, and Papus, this guy, gets both the head of the OTO and the head of the EGC, the Ecclesiastica Gnostica Catholica. After they die, it splits between Theodore Royce, who is the big OTO guy that everyone knows that eventually leads to Crowley taking over, and this
the official story.
Yeah, the official.
And then
this completely the
Haitian
other
spinoff.
Right.
Well, probably not even Haitian, probably, but it makes it to Haiti.
I suppose it's Parisian, but
well, that
Jean
Main
is Haitian.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. It's once again time for addendums for the sake of clarity in a conversation involving the OTO. John Yarker was the head of the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis Mizraim and a regular Freemasonic organization. This is often called the mother organization of the Ordo Templi Orientis. The back and forth between this is a little bit confusing, but essentially John Yarker, who had already kind of been kicked out of regular Masonry as far as we can tell, gave a charter for the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis Mizraim and the Scottish rite to Theodore Royce. Theodore Royce would then go on to use that and break it down from its larger degrees into a 9-degree academic Masonic order that would be the origins of the Ordo Templi Orientis. At the time of Yarker's death, Nkase was made the head of the ancient primitive rite of Memphis Mizraim. Nkase had been given the 10th degree in OTO and head of the French or Parisian OTO segment, essentially, by Theodore Royce before the death of Yarker. This was allegedly given to Lucien John Main, the father of Hector John Main, and taken to Haiti and the West Indies. This is where the split between the Theodore Royce-led and the Hector Jean Main-led OTO allegedly comes from. Other sources will say that Theodore Royce was made the head of the Rite of Memphis Mizraim upon the death of Yarker, but this is all sort of a weird back and forth because essentially there was no OTO and there was no Memphis Mizraim rite. There were just sort of people claiming to have the right to perform these rites. Right? Speaking of which, the EGC, the Gnostic Catholic Church, its connection to both the Rite of Memphis Mizraim and OTO seems to be related to Theodore Royce giving degrees and positions in the OTO / Rite of Memphis Mizraim to members of the EGC, including Gerard Nkase, who is also well-connected to Martinism, and we don't have time to even talk about any of that. For all intents and purposes, this seems to lead to Theodore Royce claiming a position of power within said church that he clearly didn't have, or at least positions that Royce didn't have as far as apostolic succession, whatever that would mean in the confines of a church that was started in 1890. What you need to really understand the connections here is pretty simple. despite any sort of lineage that Birdio and the OTOA is claiming, there is no documentation or reason to believe that any of these connections are real. Just as the OTO's connection to the Rite of Memphis Mizraim and the Gnostic Catholic Church is dubious and questionable. And even John Yarker giving Royce the charters for the Scottish Rite and the Rite of Memphis Mizraim is dubious because John Yarker himself had been kicked out of Masonry by the Supreme Council anyway. So all of this is based on people trading papers and possibly buying and selling them, and none of it really matters. It's all bullshit. All right, if that's made things more confusing, then sorry, it's going to be more confusing than that. Jean Maine, as we see, leads to more children that keep kind of picking up the slack till we get to Hector Francois, which is Birdio's teacher.
And for whatever reason, Hector Jean Maine runs into a Anglican missionary, more or less, and just goes, hey, I'm gonna let me show you some stuff, and then makes that guy the head after a while. And granted,
because we got the info here, right? Birdio's born, he goes to Haiti eventually, he gets made a bishop in the Ecclesiastica Gnostica Spiritualis, which is this other split off of the Gnostic Catholic Church that we have going on. And from there, Birdio at a train station meets Mark Lully. Birdio at the time is the president of the local Theosophical Society, and he's teaching astrology. So Mark Lully is where we get the other little organization here that we have been alluding to.
The LNC?
No. The LNC was created by Jean Maine and just sort of
also
associated with...
two as well.
They're kind of the same thing as the OTOA, and then he ceremonially separated them, even though they're still very much in close communion.
Okay.
But no, this is where the Karanzon Club comes from.
Oh, that's the connection. Okay, yeah.
Right. So, to simplify the Karanzon Club, because boy, is it a complicated mess sometimes.
Well, we talked about the Karanzon Club briefly in the Crybaby Thelema Hour. Just C.F. Russell made a shortcut for all these people. It's like, listen. You don't need to do all of this nonsense. I'm gonna give you the 34th degree of Masonry, and I'm gonna give you, like, you know what, for you, 12th grade. You didn't even know that was a thing, but, like, you know, there you go.
I'm not gonna talk smack about Russell's Karanzon Club.
I'm not. I like the idea of somebody who was just going around and, like, propagating the express lane of occultism.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and it pulled members.
And Russell wrote awesome stuff. The world depends on you, boy.
Yeah, Russell's a fascinating figure. But by this time, the Karanzon Club had a bit of a falling out. It actually splits into about four or five different groups, depending. The one that Mark Lully was associated with has absolutely nothing to do with Russell by this point. In fact, they're not even reading Crowley or Akkad or Russell or
it's
anybody.
It's just the name was really cool.
What tends to be happening is that a bunch of guys that they found from, like, the local gyms are meeting naked in places and talking about, like, theosophy stuff. Birdio was not very positive about it, despite the fact that he would join and he would take on this Mark Lully into the OTOA and the Gnostic, the EGS.
And also, from what we hear later, apparently he was pretty big on being naked, though. So, like...
Well, I mean, maybe the naked part wasn't what...
Maybe that's what
him.
Got him in the door. He was like, what? You're doing, huh? He said, oh, excuse me, sir, I couldn't help but noticing that lovely overcoat you have at this bus stop. Now that we've broached the Gordian knot of the various descents and lineages that we've claimed, so far, for those that are keeping score at home, Birdio claims that his teacher was a native Haitian who practiced voodoo, who also combined it with stuff from the Western tradition via the Gnostic, you know, like Gnostic churches and the pre-Crowley OTO, but also it becomes post-Crowley OTO somewhere along the line because they accepted the law of Thelema. So you've got voodoo, Gnosticism, Thelema, all claiming, like, actual traditions and initiation and, like, so-and-so laid hands on so-and-so. that sort of thing, all right? Not like they just picked this up and ran with it. Birdio is saying he's got, like, you know, he got the cred. He has the papers. And then also, it goes even further into, like, the pre-post and Crowleyan stuff, because there is a 3 times removed branch of the Carranzon Club involved as well.
Yeah, and it only gets more complicated from there, because there's a long string of people, you know, giving the laying of hands and initiating so-and-so into this and so-and-so into that, and people claiming to have representation or being like an authorized representative of this current and that current and this organization. And it's mostly just kind of nonsense.
Yeah. And then we have, and I won't explicitly say where this goes on the timeline, but it's an important thing to note because his name already came up once. If it wasn't for another OTO offshoot and its prominent leader, we probably wouldn't know a damn thing about Birdio, because Kenneth Grant, being the type of person he was, he seemed, I'm not sure how he, does it mention, did you find anything that mentioned like how those two hooked up?
I think just by being general weirdos in the occult sphere.
Game recognized game. But they basically, they hook up, and Kenneth Grant, because you can read the Typhonian trilogies, and he mentions Birdio. He mentions the LNC. He mentions the OTOA. He name drops this stuff. It's like he has footnotes. There's Birdio's artwork, and that's a thing we haven't even touched on, is the man's prolific amount of paintings and all sorts of stuff. But his artwork ends up in Kenneth Grant's books at certain points. And Kenneth Grant had a wife who was an amazing artist, and he was like, nah, let me get the caveman. Let me get the guy that looked like he was putting the acrylics in his mouth and spitting. I say that like I'm actually very fond of his art, but it's a real raw, primitive sort of art style. And then like Steffi Grant is just like, oh my God, you practiced. You're anti-Allen Iverson. Ultimately, Kenneth Grant is part of the propagation of this man's, let's call it what it is, fame. His notoriety is driven largely because another guy who is well-known for being super, you know, you could argue brilliant, you could argue fascinating, interesting, you could also argue convoluted, weird, and unnecessary, but that's Kenneth Grant. And Birdio, it was probably a lot of game recognized game. Grant and Birdio are held up as two cut from the same cloth, as it were. I mean, there's a lot of jokes where it's like, if you took a drink every time you didn't understand something in a Birdio or Grant book, you'd be dead from alcohol poisoning by the 4th page.
Yeah, right.
But the parts that you can wrap your head around are, you know, and it's not that they're completely obtuse or they're entirely gobbledygook, but they both have a writing style that just crams so much into so little space, and they don't always fill in the blanks for you.
We should probably add the third person in here. And this is someone that we might do a special on them way down the line, but the Holy Trinity of this sort of era of post-Crowley weird Thelemic mysticism, right, is Kenneth Grant, Michael Birdio, and Maggie Ingalls, who everyone knows better as Nima.
Yeah, I believe Nima also gets name dropped a lot in Grant's work.
Well, these are the three people that have all committed themselves to the post-Aeon of Horus idea. Maybe not specifically all like the Aeon of Mott, but all of them have that in some capacity.
Yeah, and then, and at the very least, these are all three authors, occultists, that recontextualize the Aeon of Horus. You know,
right.
Birdio talks about the Cytherean current and stuff like that, or the Thelema physics and things like of that nature, which you can fit them into the strictly Crowleyan Thelemic ideas. It's stuff that that it doesn't fly if you were to just go to if there is such thing as a run-of-the-mill OT. I guess if you went to the Guntherites and wanted to talk to them, they I'm not saying they like tar and feather you, but they'd be like, that's some funky shit.
Yeah, well,
that is not sanctioned.
I think the important thing to note with Birdio is that he is very much in the same vein as a Kenneth Grant. He's someone that is writing very dense, very complicated, and at times very obtuse,
opaque.
Yeah.
There's a good word.
Yeah, opaque writings that are based on ideas cobbled together from not just Crowley, but a wide breadth of occult traditions.
And not only that, but also stuff that they made up.
Yeah, stuff that they made up.
Things that are of their own invention. And it's the thing of, they are indicative of that era that leads into chaos magic.
Oh, very much so. Well, think about it like this. When the Gnostic Voodoo Workbook, Birdio's first major published work, was published, it was 1988.
Yeah, which
chaos
means
magic had been a
Liber
thing.
Liber Null had been out for what, 7 years, something like that. 79 is when Liber Null
something
comes
like that.
Out. 87 is when it says it's originally published, but I don't think that's actually right.
Well, in the same vein, though, Birdio had been writing things for well before the book was actually published anyway.
Yeah.
But keep in mind that this is the era, you know,
at the bare minimum, they came out right next to each other. But I swear to God, there's something about, like, Liber Null and Psychonaut getting real, like, the first actual printing of that was, like, earlier than that. But either way, the point is that it was definitely in that era where we were trying to get past the stuffy robe ceremonial tradition, you know? And while Birdio definitely loved him some ceremonial stuffy robe stuff, he wasn't so much on the idea of clinging to a long story tradition. He was much more interested in wild fringe innovation, but then saying that it came from a long line of stuff.
Right, yeah. That's probably the one thing that little biography that we read at the beginning there got right. It's very much that what Birdio is trying to do is build interesting innovations and not just repeating the same sort of, like, okay, well, this is what Livy said, this is what Agrippa said, this is what the old voodoo tradition people will tell you.
Instead, he would, but, and I guess maybe that's the other end of it. And we should also get out in front of it, too, is that the big issue is that this is like a white Midwesterner trying to talk to you about voodoo, and it's dubious where he really got it, and it's dubious what Hector Jean Main was really about, that sort of thing. Because if you were to try to talk, that's why we talked about, you know,
the Minnesota voodoo.
Yeah, that's the joke, you know, is that this is... This is not voodoo. It might use some of the words, and it might follow a smidge of the ideas, but it's practically night and day. And once you add in all of the Western magic components of it, it's
something else.
There's
entirely
no need. There's like the fact that it keeps saying voodoo is superfluous. It doesn't need to be there. If Birdio had taken that one word out, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't have. They wouldn't bristle quite so much. And
well,
that's,
I mean, but he also uses a lot of the idea, you know, the concept of Loa, the families, yeah. Gede, Legba, yeah. All these things, you know, and there are very much aspects of real voodoo that are central to this sort of work.
But they are so syncretized into everything else that it's somehow taking oil and water and you made it. But like, if you add enough stuff, oil and water can mix because now it's a cake.
You're better than me. I was gonna say it's like you added oil and water and you made mayo, but
well, that works too. No, what it really is you put oil on the water and you lit the oil on fire so now no one can get at it.
Yeah,
and never shall they be separated.
Yeah.
So maybe a little meandering, but that is a pretty firm step into the biography of who this guy is and where things start. It requires going back to before Crowley had the OTO, so
yeah.
It's quite a jump back. But then it's also the funny thing of, like, there is no documentation to prove that any of that is. Hector Jean Main, who, again, as far as we can tell, is a real person, because people that are not Birdio, like, talk to him. And
there are photos of him.
Yeah, there are pictures. You know, that sort of thing. That's more than Castaneda had. So, like, he was a real guy. So part of me wonders, how much of this did Bertio legitimately think that he had an actual in? Was, like, you know, at what was Bertio at some point taken in by somebody who was a maybe more charismatic and knowledgeable that was claiming they had an actual lineage to something and he just ran with it? Or do you think maybe somewhere along the line he realized, this guy's full of shit, but I kind of like him? Because they, as far as I know, there's no falling out between these guys.
No, it's, Jean Maine dies, yeah, from what I know.
Ironically,
still on good terms.
Ironically, who has the who has the longstanding lovely teacher-student relationship? The two people that are accused of being crazy hucksters. All the legit magicians of you know, particularly of OTO. You're my magic baby, but now I hate you. You stole my book. We're going to fight over this, you know, this, that. You're not legitimate. We're kicking you out.
What the fuck is the Carranza Club? What the hell? Get the hell away from me, Russell.
Yeah, I'm going to threaten you with legal action, all that stuff. And then meanwhile, the fake OTO, it's just two guys. And like, yeah, we do all these seances together and we talk about radionics and we do these classes. And also, you know, Legba's there. Legba's involved. Isn't that cool? There's scorpions and spiders everywhere. You know, we're having we're dope. We're doing dope ass shit. And my teacher dies and he leaves me the order and I carry on the tradition. It's like, it's wild. That never happens.
I suppose just to lay it out there a little bit, because we've obviously talked about the OTO hating each other, getting rid of their own members, saying that you're not a fucking, you know, OTO. You're not a grade 9 anymore. You're not a grade 11. Get the fuck out of here. Kenneth Grant being like, hey, I'm the head of the OTO in England. And Carl Germer being like, the fuck you are.
Yeah.
And Marcella Mota being like, I'm the head of the OTO. He's like, no, you're not. You know, they're just continually thinking. So what did Bertio think of the OTO?
That I was from Atlantis. I know that comes up.
Yeah, it very much from Atlantis. But,
yeah, that was the... For those of you that don't know, there was a time when every magical order traced their roots back to Egypt because we didn't know how to translate hieroglyphics. So we just made up shit about Egypt. And then we started being able to learn meaningful things about Egypt. So we had to go back further to, like, Sumeria. You know, that's why Crowley's like, we're reclaiming the Sumerian tradition. And then we found out enough about Sumeria to be like, oh man, the descent of Ishtar isn't what we thought it was. So some people got around that by, like, just saying fake places. That's like the Lemurian Time War, or we go back to the fictional city of that one Greek guy that nobody cares about.
You know, again, I think the parallel between Grant and Bertio here is kind of interesting, because Grant claimed that the Lema itself was part of a greater draconian tradition that he traced back to Egypt and so on, which is interesting because it's like essentially a fake tradition, but it goes back so far and is so kind of amorphous that you don't have to point at people and be like, that's my guy. Whereas Bertio is like, yes, this is all very real. It goes all the way back to real people, I swear.
And I got it from the notes of a guy who was not the primary student of the guy that taught me all of this stuff. That's another thing. He said he got it from Mark.
Yeah, he said he got it from Mark. Again, that's just Koenig making the claim there, so who fucking knows?
And that's another part, too.
But I trust Koenig more than I trust a lot of these people, because he doesn't seem to have anything to gain from this other than being like, isn't the OTO funny?
Yeah, and the OTO is really funny, guys.
It is really funny.
It's really cool, but it's also really funny.
Very funny.
And I think, for us at least, you know, our... And we'll get into more of our personal opinions later. But for us, it really doesn't matter that it's fake.
Not even in the slightest.
It doesn't matter that it's fake any more than Kenneth Grant's, you know, OTO draconian tradition is fake.
Any more than the Cthulhu fucking shit being fake.
And that's the other thing is that, well, it's Pride Month too. So it's important that we talk about the trans Yogithian current. That goes to... That's a terrible joke. I'm sorry.
No, I have a worse one though, sure. Because... One of the big developments in the OTOA is Michael Bertio's development of post-ninth degree workings. For those of you who don't know and didn't hear the Thalema episode, The OTO has a big degree system where you go from first degree all the way to ninth, and then there's technically a 10th and 11th degree, but the 10th is just sort of a technical one, and the 11th degree has had a whole host of issues involving people and legitimacy. But the long and short of it is, it's all kind of getting you prepared to teach you how to do sex magic, with the 9th degree being the big secret of, yo, you can do magic by fucking. And ain't that wild?
And what's lovely about that is that you got to go through all of this stuff before that. But with chaos magic, that's step one.
But then the 11th degree is, of course, anal sex.
Yeah.
And that's Crowley's, the thing that Crowley hangs his hat on is that he made the 11th degree.
Maybe if you listen to the last episode where we talked about karate chopping somebody's spirit out of them, that's how he did it to Victor Newberg. I'm pretty sure that is what he is talking about when he talked about displacing Victor Newberg's spirit and making him write poetry.
At any rate, Bertio had this to say on the subject, right? As you may or may not know, we did mention Patrick King in the Thelema Crybaby episode, right?
I'm not sure we did.
I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did. But if we didn't, just so you know, Patrick King, member of the OTO after its reconstruction by Grady McMurtry and others, went to Grady McMurtry and said, hey, we have all this stuff that Crowley said about the 11th degree, but we don't have anything actually in the system.
Oh, you did mention this. Yeah.
So, hey, can I go do the 11th degree? And he was like, sure, why not? I don't have a dog in that fight. And then after McMurtry died, things were not all right there. But the point being, Bertio, who not only taught the 11th degree in the OTOA and other places, but a increasingly forward system going up to, like, I think the 15th degree or something like that.
Again, following in the footsteps of C.F. Russell.
Yeah, just adding all sorts of stuff. Bertio said the caliph had no authority to give the 11th degree, as he never got it from AC or anybody. That is him saying that Grady McMurtry could not give anyone the 11th degree because he did not get it, which McMurtry responded to. The question has arisen as to whether or not Crowley ever made any homosexual advances to me. The answer is no. Happy Pride Month.
It's just in the context, it's pretty funny.
Well, you have to keep that in mind because that's a very real thing in the OTO, fake or real. The use of sexual acts as a piece of initiation. And that's something that you have to address and it has to be known that this was what they were doing.
That was the idea. That, like, not only was it skeevy, but like that was the idea of, like, that was what you were supposed to do. Like, you had a magic teacher, and it was like, eventually, he's going to fuck me in the ass.
Yeah.
Which, just when you say stuff like that, like, if you hear things like that, even with the context of, like, sexual magic and stuff, it really does make you go, this was an elaborate way to fuck people. And we're going to get into that and just, I feel like we're saying that a lot lately. Like, we're going to get into that in a minute. We're going to get into that in a minute.
Well, just yeah. Diddle.
Diddle, diddle.
Hey, diddle, diddle. But my last little bit on Bertio's opinions of the OTO. So, and I quote, "We are not a history club or a nostalgia buffs coffee shop. We are out for sheer power and good times. Fuck the goody-goody worship of the goddess. Shit in her face. I say, Karanzan. The purpose of the Karanzan Club is to destroy the OTO and to make sodomized mutes out of its members." I think he didn't like them.
Well, and it also goes to the Kenneth Grants, the Michael Bertios, and then to another extent, the Peter Carrolls of occultism, right? The people that saw where occultism was, particularly where the Western tradition was, and was like, all right, this is whack. This is not helping. This is not getting me where I want. What works? How are we going to break from this? And I will say a brief aside here. It's funny to me because if you find videos of Michael Bertio, he is like this, I won't say sweet, but he is this very placid, old man who is like showing you his paintings and just sort of talking. He doesn't even look at the camera sometimes. He's just sort of, oh, well, and this is the Trans-Yogothian golem that I have painted.
It's going to sound really bad. But
young Bert, he looks like your fucking grandpa. But apparently young Bertio said sodomized mutes.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
He really reminds me of like George Lucas in interviews.
Yes.
Like, because you can tell he's just kind of this like nerdy dude talking about stuff that is super specific and important to him.
But I will say, we are out for pure power and good times. That is some that's like one of the most coyote fucking things I've ever heard.
It's also the most dilemmic shit I've ever heard. You know, that's very real shit right there. Yeah. That is like, we're out for power and good times. Like, that's Nietzsche right there, dude.
Because that seems like the cry of, you know, results be your proof, or, you know, like that nothing is true, everything's permitted. That sort of, it has that punch to it. It's like, what is magic about? It's about doing the work to get a desired result. You know, what do you want to make happen? If your entire idea of magic turns into a series of steps on a staircase that lead up to some kind of nice spiritual realization, you're a mystic. And there's a place for that. But sometimes you need that pure, unadulterated, I'm going to do something to make the neighbor's dog's head pop off because he keeps fucking barking.
Yeah, well, it is a drastically and dramatically underrated part of magic, especially these days, because you tend to get those two camps. And in fact, you, listener, people who are in the Discord and stuff, I have divided you already in my head into these two categories. There are those of us that are interested in making our lives easier and just getting the things we want by doing magic. And then there are those of us that are very like spiritually minded and get the feel goods and stuff. And I'm not saying either of those are wrong.
Well, I think often what you'll find is people that oscillate between those.
True.
You know, it's very easy to want to reach sort of a spiritual peak and try to find the oneness when things are going well in your life. And then like some shit fucks up and then you knuckle down and you're like, I'm back on my bullshit. Ch-ch-ch, fire off a sigil.
Right, 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 right. And I feel like ultimately what all of our problem is that we need a lot more of what Michael Bertio there is talking about.
At least in that regard.
Right, yeah. We need power and we need good times. All of that said, if you have the impression that we think like Bertio is like a goofy clown or something, you're completely wrong. We genuinely think that Michael Bertio is probably one of, if not the most interesting magician that is still alive today.
That's true. Yeah, he's still kicking. You can email him. I thought about emailing him, but then like I know what the next section is.
I would like to have this episode reach him or somebody that could talk to him, and then we'll talk to him afterwards.
Listeners,
send this to Michael Bertio.
Send this to Michael Bertio.
He's in Chicago, too.
I heard you was talking shit. And then he's like, he shows up with his wizard staff and just hits it on the ground. My fucking walls fall over. I'm out for power and good times, bucko.
Yeah, but legitimately, I think Bertio is probably one of the greats.
And that can be that can mean different things to a lot of people. But I think in terms of the work that he presents, he's definitely up there with Kenneth Grant, and we think very highly of Kenneth Grant. He's definitely up there with people like Spare in terms of like obscure but deeply relevant to modern occultism. There's always the things you can point to of like Midwesterner doing voodoo, not knowing what the hell he's on about. But when you can take the work at face value and say, what are the elements that are being presented? What are the practices that are being described? And then doing stuff with them, they might seem bizarre. They're not always, it's not quite as easy as, you know, pulling up one of the papers from old AA or OTO type stuff where it says like, all right, make this sign and do this. But so sometimes they're a little harder to wrap your head around, but they're fascinating.
I'll even say it's harder stuff than like Lieber Null.
Well, yeah. But I would say with the caveat of like, it's not always harder because it's more complicated. Sometimes it's harder because it takes certain things, either with the intention that Bertio thought that people were going to like flock to him as students and he'd be able to explain it, or he just assumed you knew what he meant.
Well, but that's kind of a, I think that's a positive thing. I don't necessarily think it's a negative thing, at least. Well, there's a certain level of well, it's the it's the old Alan Watts thing about a good teacher in the West is someone that makes it very easy for you to understand and do, and a good teacher in the East is someone that makes you figure it the fuck out.
Sure, yeah. And it's not, I'm not being like, oh man, he should have written like a step by step. I'm just saying sometimes you'll read something that he's written, and it's like, man, this seems really interesting. I'm not 100% I'm doing it right.
Well, yeah, and then sometimes he'll say, oh yeah, and there's information here in the appendix. You're like, no, it's not.
It ain't
fucking
there.
Liar.
Just write to me at this address that I haven't lived at in 10 years. Fuck. So legitimately, we think highly of him. I think he's fascinating. I mentioned my Christmas gift last year was a copy of Ontological Graffiti, and I'm fucking through the moon about it. I pick it up and just sort of flip through the art sometimes, and it's fascinating. I'm not a person that ever feels like a book I've got is like, oh, there's power rating it off of this, but like,
really?
No.
Wow.
It's a book, Holmes. You know what's got power? If I smack you upside the head with it. And this is a very heavy book, so like, it's powerful.
Sorry, I'm just the complete opposite. I think that even like non-spooky books have
most
like
of my
power.
Book, most of
I have way more books than me too, I think.
No. The contents of the book have power. The physical book, like, you know, I've never been one that's hung up on the idea of I need a physical copy of something. I need it in my brain.
Okay, I guess that, but I still, I don't know, maybe getting the first three parts of Zeus's Knees kind of changed me on that, because I hold those books, and I feel like, holy shit.
Yeah, I used to have $400. I can't even talk shit. I look at my tattoos and go, man, I used to have all this money. Me with a cheese grater going, can I return this? Or a mandolin, one clean slice. Just hand it back to him.
So anyway, as we've sort of gone through, Bertio clearly doesn't like the OTO.
So what we've got is Bertio is kind of a clown. Bertio is kind of awesome. But now it's time for Bertio's kind of awful.
Yeah, maybe.
So,
where do you want to go first? Do you want to talk about your thing first, or do you want to read this little Patrick King quote first?
Well, we did mention Kenneth Grant. So, for everybody who knows Kenneth Grant, this quote might offer a subtle distinction between them.
Right. So,
this is Patrick King again.
Yeah, this is Patrick King, the head of the Rite of Shiraz, the 11th degree in the OTO. Tragic, tragic figure in some ways. He wrote a diary of his workings of the 11th degree called Liber Kadosh. You can find it online. And not only does it show some very interesting records of sexual magic, but also gives us some fascinating insights into both Thelema at the time and things that can be used to shed some light on occultism today. So, this quote, another insight into the mystery of the unfolding of the eons. In every era, the esoteric gnosis is that which will in time become the exoteric doctrine of the succeeding epoch. I think that was supposed to be epoch. Anyway, thus in the eon of Isis, the world, life was conceived as a gift from the Great Mother, nourishment being drawn directly and exclusively from her. The secret of the high priesthood of the period was simply that the intervention of the Father was indeed not only part of it, but essential to the continuation of life. When the secret, such as it was, is at last out of the bag, then we have the advent of the worship of Osiris / the Father God. The type of womanhood is trampled back into the earth. But the actual secret of their gnosis has now been succeeded by another. The old hidden mystery, now the property of the common people who accept manifest formula as the word of the truth. The new secret, then, is not merely that sex has a connection to the bearing of children, the old Aeon practice of virgins lying under a full moon and so become with child has long been considered rank superstition, but that sex can be used towards other goals. Note the taboo against its use, even in the pursuit of any sort of pleasure. Tis the devil. So in one form or another, it was sexual magic that was the true key to the Osirian High Councils, their forbidden and occult truth. Ordo Templi Orientis guarded this mystery at the turn of the century, and it was this brotherhood which was transformed by Thelema and the child god Horus which reveals it today. The old Gnosis is out of the bag, sex magic books adorning the shelves of our present everyday intelligentsia. We thus have at present several sex cults coming into being, all claiming to hold and to reveal this ancient and forbidden fruit to the world. Advertise secret schools of inner only, no outer types allowed, please, mysteries of sexuality. Clubs for people who like to think of themselves as magicians as well as sexually liberated star type individuals. First rate, top class esoteric ones, if there is such a thing. They are all it. You know where it's at, baby, occult societies. Of course, they are all the true children of the light, the first of the new era. Not like those hung up old gappers who the long dead and long gone turned on type of the sort, like whatever they were anyways. The OTO of Kenneth Grant no doubt tops the list of this sort of organizational non-subtlety. The frantic freakouts of the Franco-Haitian OTOA, the desperate wing of the same phenomena. I would place this one distinction between the two aforementioned societies. Grant believes in what he is doing and has turned a good mind to the rehashing of a dead era's magic, while our Mr. B has actually seen through the whole thing and now spends all of his time selling anything he thinks people will pay for. It is the worst sort of Rosicrucian racketeering, really.
Man, Patrick, yeah, so that King was a is, lot. I hate that he's funnier than us.
Oh, yeah, Patrick King's fucking hilarious.
Oh, man, damn.
That is high-level shit talking.
Oh, my God. That's shit.
But it's a brilliant
insight. All we got is hey, diddle, diddle.
It's a brilliant insight, but at the same time, it points to what other people at the time thought Berio was doing.
Yeah, and
they thought he was a huckster.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm not even going to go as far as to say that's gospel. It's very funny, but the idea of, like, referring to the Typhonian OTO as sexually liberated, Grant was a bigot.
Yeah, thought, Grant was afraid of doing it in the butt.
And Berio was like, I'm for it. get over here. I'll make you...
Well, getting into the next piece we're going to talk about.
But that's clearly the thing, is that and that's still the perception for a lot. When I made the joke earlier, it's like, you're either going to hate this or we're going to make sure this episode leaves nobody happy. But that's the perception by a lot of people, is that this was at best, Berio is a raving idiot. At worst, he's a malicious huckster. Like, he knows this is nonsense and he's peddling it because you're going to buy it. You know, that sort of thing. It's like, you know, write your questions on the back of a $20 bill and send it to me. But I suppose at the same time, you know, that's every occult teacher. When we thought, man, I thought dragons were really cool, Mr. Kelly. You know, we basically bawled him out, saying, like, is that worth it? Is regurgitated Crowley with a dragon motif worth it? Is regurgitated Crowley with a voodoo motif worth it? And I wouldn't say that Berio is actually just regurgitated Crowley, but still. The other dicey thing, there's more than one source for these types of allegations and talks, but I'm using one primarily from, I believe it's called Spirit Core. It seems to just be a blog. Core Spirit, my bad. And it's attributed to a Frater Barabbas? Yeah, Frater Barabbas. But it is a sort of firsthand account of my experiences with Michael Berio. It says a lot of what you'd already expect of, like, dubious accreditations and lineage and the overt attempts to syncretize anything and everything that they could get their hands on just to put it in there. Berio being someone who courted controversy, so they probably Birdio probably leaned into the idea of like, oh, it's a white guy voodoo thing. He's like, yeah, well, it got people talking. It says a lot of what we've said, where it's like Birdio probably wouldn't have been known anywhere if it wasn't for the fact that Kenneth Grant latched onto him and elevated him in the same way that Spare, as cool as Spare seems to be, a lot of you probably wouldn't
know. No one would know about Spare.
Yeah. Kenneth Grant went out of his way to get Spare, not just talk about Spare, but get his stuff republished and put out there. But this person talks about the firsthand account of basically like going to Birdio when he was doing lectures, and he would do lectures, and then like you know, somebody does a lecture, somebody does some kind of performance, and what do they do? Now they're sitting at the table with their stuff for sale. You know, you go buy their book or talk to them for a second. And then Birdio would use those things not only as like a source of income, but also as the means to get students or at the very least occult connections of like, hey, come here. And Birdio seems from these accounts, Birdio's jam was getting around people, getting tore up, drinking a lot, and like gossiping about occultism. And that's kind of like, what we do a lot of gossip and shit talk on this show. That's we talk about other people. Oh no. But that seemed to be the thing that he was really into. He liked to tout the fact that he was like, I'm friends with Kenneth Grant, probably because that was like the highest person up that chain. I mean, I guess maybe if he had known Grady, he'd have talked about that, I suppose. But
well, he clearly hated Grady.
Well,
which is
maybe
you can understand that.
Maybe because Grady didn't care for him. You know, if he had said you can be 11th degree, who knows? He said all 11th your degree. It starts there with like sort of things of like, you know, Birdio liked to drink a lot, and it says things like he wore ill-fitting clothes and kind of looked like a slob. He was just a sort of flabby, hairy dude, things like that, which is like, you know, whatever. That's not a crime. But I mean, I'm 6'5 and got a six pack, so I can't relate. But you know, there's nothing wrong. No, but there's nothing, you know, that's not a big issue, I suppose. But they do make the distinction that it's like, it's weird because in rituals he'd be wearing like satin vestments and looking, you know, dressed to the nines. And then like you'd be hanging out at his apartment where everything is slathered with fake voodoo paintings and occult objects and a skull on the desk and things like, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And then he's in like a shirt that's too tight, that's missing a button, you know, that sort of thing. But the bigger issue is that this person, this freighter Barabbas, threw a little bit of back and forth along with who they say, like, this was my magical teacher who was also homies with Birdio. Basically, they're like, hey, yeah, you want to get initiated into whatever? And it's like, yeah, I would love to be initiated by you, Mr. Birdio, sir. And it turns into what they describe as, I was stripped naked, presented to all these loas and spirits, and then had a large goblet of wild turkey. I think they said like it was like a third of the bottle in a goblet. So like, you know, big, huge pimp cup, whatever. I don't know. Basically, the initiation amounts to they were naked, presented to the loas and spirits, made to drink a third of a bottle of wild turkey in a big goblet, and then Birdio, who was also naked, hopped on top of me, pinned me down, and tried to make out with me, and I was just really, really not into it at all. And it seems to be that the...
Shame.
I just wasn't into it, and I didn't feel like being violated by this person. And it seems to be that that was Birdio's MO. They even mentioned that to be initiated as a bishop in the LNC or whatever.
LCN.
Yeah, sorry, I keep saying LNC. But the LCN, it was an inside joke with a couple people because it was like it meant that somebody fucked you in the ass. It was the idea that Birdio was an
esoteric diddler.
A mean-spirited, manipulative, egotistical jerk right off the bat, and then a perverse, if not rapist, at the bare, well, I guess, you know, if not an outright violent rapist of like forcing himself on people, used his esoteric teachings as justification or means to manipulate someone into giving sexual favors. And there's just no excuse for that. There's just nothing you can do to put a good face on that. And this is one person's word on the situation,
and
but it isn't the only one.
Yeah, it's not the only one, and it's not an uncommon thing of the time.
Yeah, well, it's not an uncommon thing of now.
Right, right, right.
The I guess you could say what you want about the internet making occultism accessible for people who, like,
shouldn't.
Who should not. But at the bare minimum, it's like, at least now, if, like, if you can just download some PDFs and you can buy a robe off of Amazon, you don't have to have somebody fucking mashing your parts just to learn something.
In probably, you know, in fact, I won't even qualify it. I will not discredit the idea that sexual interaction can lead to esoteric insight and initiation of some kind.
I mean, sex magic works.
Right, yeah. I personally think that if that is going to be the thing that happens in an initiation ritual, you should probably tell the person in some kind of capacity.
I would really, and they don't explicitly say, like, oh, they didn't tell me what was going on or whatever, but they just mentioned that, like, overall, it felt like a violation, and they just weren't fucking into it. And they did everything they could to keep this person from, to keep Birdio from actually, you know, having sex with them. It's, you know, it was an unpleasant experience. They weren't happy about it. But they don't describe it as, like, I was traumatized and this was awful. It was just, like, this was creepy and sleazy and I wasn't about it. So good for this person. At least they were able to maintain themselves and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What that, to me, what that says is that they didn't know explicitly that's what was coming.
Well, yeah, because if you knew, then you'd either be like, why would you fight it if you agreed to it?
Yeah.
If you knew it was happening, you would have been like,
you might have known.
All
that,
right, I
maybe,
guess it's going to happen.
And that's the thing. Maybe it was just a thing of like, there's sexual elements to this. And they were like, no, I'm for it. And then in the moment, it was like, no, I am not.
Never mind. Like his mustache touching mine.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But either way, It's very, and then they describe, like, the fact is, like, it was very obvious I was fighting Birdio, but, like, everybody else just sort of let it go. And it was because Birdio was hot shit. And even to the point of, like, well, I'm sure everybody else was also getting sexually assaulted because they wanted Birdio's super magic blessings.
Right, right, right.
And they even make the concession that Birdio, it's like, this isn't somebody who says, oh, magic was a sham to sleep with me, or Birdio doesn't have any good, doesn't know anything about the occult. They're like, it's just that Birdio used the fact that they were a prominent occultist with a lot of crazy ideas as a means to get people who would be willing sexual participants in his spooky woo-woo bullshit.
Well, shit, I do that. I go, I have a magic podcast, baby. You want to go back to my place?
Yeah, but that's, you're saying that to your fiance, and she's like, I don't listen
I
to
live
your
here.
Podcast.
She's like, what do you mean go back to your place?
I don't listen to it. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Will you take the garbage out, please?
Hey, baby, you want to listen to my podcast?
All right, so
no.
All the-
No.
All right, so all the unpleasantries of all of this aside, what did Birdio actually give us then?
A great fly swatter. This could take out a family of roaches. Like, you know that thing where you flick on the lights and all the roaches scatter? If you were like to get
you
a friend.
Quick enough, you'd get them all.
Get a friend, right? They flick the light. You hurl the book the minute they come on. And you will get 90% of the roaches.
Yeah, you no bug bomb needed.
It's even more effective if you don't use the digital version.
Okay, but seriously. Birdio has written a lot.
Yeah, but we're going to focus on the most famous work and then
the one we like.
The one that is literally in my hands right now.
So we've already mentioned it several times here. The Gnostic Voodoo Workbook.
It's actually, I believe it's the Voodoo Gnostic, but it's like Gnostic, it feels like Tok Tik instead of Tik Tok. Gnostic Voodoo sounds like it makes sense. Voodoo Gnostic does not.
The Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. That's the name. That's the actual name of it.
My understanding that came from Birdio himself when he gave me the 11th degree. It was something I had seen him type out. I believe there's a revised and expanded edition, stuff like that. But and then there's videos of him talking about it. But this book came out because Birdio was supposed to be giving like a week long workshop type thing where he was going to go over some meaningful subjects of the Voodoo Gnostic current, lucky hoodoos and things like that. more or less what happened was that the workshop seemed like it was going to be a sure thing, and then it fell through, and he was left with all of these notes and ideas and exercises and like, oh, I was going to talk about this. And somebody floated the idea of, was like, well, why don't you take this and make a book? You know, we can get it published. And he compiled the content of this workshop into a book, and it illustrates a couple different things. It comes across more like a series of essays or somewhat interrelated modules, but they don't really connect. Like, there's the Grimoire Gay Day, there's the opening part, which is the idea of the lucky hoodoos, which to this day I still think is really, it's really well written, in the idea that it's full of these sort of positive affirmations and pretty basic exercises that are effective. If you didn't know anything about magic and you just read the first 50 pages, you would have stuff that you could toy with for weeks, and it would probably do a lot for you. There's a self-initiation rite of introducing yourself to the lucky hoodoo spirits. There's an explanation on like how to pick up numbers for like running the ponies and stuff like that. There's a thing, there's money magic in there.
Yeah, this is oddly enough a great beginner book. In fact, I would say it's probably one of the best
the first 50 pages.
Well, no, well that's what I think, because it gives you just enough to be not only fascinated and interested in occultism if you've never dealt with it before, but it gives you enough to be confident in yourself. That way, when you get out of the first section, and, you know, in fact, even the Grimoire Gay Day is probably basic enough that you can kind of work it for yourself. But once you get into, like, part two, like the Gnostic energies part, that's where things start to get really kind of weird and back and forth. But by that time, you should have been doing enough of this stuff that you're like, never mind, nah, I got this. I can figure this shit out.
Mm-hmm. And it really does involve everything. It starts with the lucky hoodoo spirits, which are the spirits of Atlanteans and the spirits of the dead, you know, the great spirits under the earth and the great magicians of the water.
Hang on.
You can use them to get money.
To get money and women. And it's very basic kind of magic setup. It's like quarters magic. It's like, hey, get candles that are different colors and light them. You know, put them in different directions, light them, make a little prayer to the spirits. Maybe you make like a magic square, and he goes into excruciating detail of how to make a magic square.
Oh, yeah. And then even describes the technological elements of all of these things, stuff like that. But then as you go on, then you go into the Grimoire Gay Day, which is like there's the three gay days, but they're all one gay day. And it's related to the Christ archetype. And then also... it introduces the concepts of the various Loa and how they can be used. He describes the astral time machine, which shows up in the invisible. It doesn't show up in that form, but you can see the influence. But the one thing that does show up is the Zaraguin, which I talked about previously. The Zaraguin are in the invisibles, and that's how I found Birdio in the first place. I was like...
The infamous spider Loa.
Yep, the spiders... spider, scorpion, crustacean, whatever. They're described primarily as spiders in the Gnostic voodoo. And there's just other people that add on to them. I still think they're fascinating. I've done work. I've had successes with them. It describes the uses of sexual radioactivities to feed these spirits, and also the sort of interplay, the exchange of like, you know, there's a spirit there or a Loa for everything you could possibly want to do. You just, and they're eager, the spirits are eager to work with you. You just have to hold up your end of the bargain. And that can be as simple as, you know, lighting some candles, saying prayer, and offering a little bit of your energies up. And it can be as complicated as an eight-directional mandala that you have to, and understanding the space-time continuum, things like that. And then it tries to illustrate a cosmology of not only how the three gay days express themselves in different ways, how it's like, you know, it describes Baron Zaraguin as an expression of these three that is complemented by Lundi. So, and then the Marasa, which is, that's an actual voodoo thing, but it gets sort of cobbled together. It's a little odd.
Well, like so much of it, you know, because Legba, Gede, various others that are mentioned in the list of Loa. These are all Loa that are actually very popular and known in the Haitian voodoo tradition,
but
interpreted in a way that is so Birdio's singular and apart from them.
Yeah, so his syncretism of them is, and again, a little opaque, a little hard to read sometimes, but once you get your head around it, there's a lot of neat things that can happen with it. And again, we're talking like the first 50 pages, and this thing's, 300 plus, but then it goes into, drawing down planetary energies and the proper vibrations of different planets and how those relate to different forms of sexual intercourse, because those sexual radioactivities are used in different ways. And then also, I believe in a very interesting thing that I can't think of other systems that really talk about this much other than like Eastern systems. And even then they don't go quite in this way. I suppose there's sort of astrological elements to this too, but it describes the hot points throughout the body, right?
Oh yeah, the points chaud.
Yeah, and I'm avoiding the French because I don't feel like butchering a language that I don't speak.
I'm good. That's kind of my thing on this show.
But yeah, these hot points, which are, let's call them what they are. There are occult centers that have correspondences with various spirits and Loa, and it's the idea of... by initiating yourself, either by sending Birdio $20 and letting him make out with you, or by self-initiation. He does mention the idea of making contact with the Loa through meditation, and they can inform you of how to properly initiate yourself, that sort of thing. But the idea of finding the corresponding body parts with these Loa, and I do really like, there's a quote in there that is like, you have the ultimate occult tool, it's your body. And that's a really nice one.
Here's the thing, my natural reaction is to pronounce it Ojas, but I'm pretty sure, I guess it's Ojas,
the Ojas,
yeah, which he describes as the ultimate magical force of the physical body and the physical manifestation. And it's sort of synonymous with like sexual energy, but also not, in the same way that nothing is, everything is everything in this sort of thing.
Right, right. And then hell, we can go, and we could pluck out different things. Like I think the hot points is an interesting one, because the idea of in the East, you'd have something that's akin to like a chakra, where you're installing the deity into a point in yourself. So it's the... by reaching the initiation and finding the spot, or at least the point and things like that. And then that also further relates to the sort of different planes, or as he's described them, ontic spheres, which are magical and imaginational, magical and imaginal.
In fact, hey, here's a little quote, just because I had also just pulled up something on the ontic spheres. In the mystical metaphysics of the Zoroastrian Gnostics and Sufis, there is the world of archetypal images, Mundus Archetypus Imaginalis, which is between the world of sense perception and the world of the abstract essences or ideas in the mind of God. In some of my other work, I have referred to this realm as the ontic sphere, for it is being. However, this world fits the imaginations of the magician so perfectly that what the magician seeks to explore or seeks to find out, whatever he does, it is all there in this Mundus Archetypus Imaginalis. Thus, the magician is able to show by means of this metaphysics what is the most fantastic is also the most objective.
Which relates to a lot of, Kenneth Grant, the imagination or image-making quality is the most important of the magician, or William Blake as the imagination as divine faculty.
He specifically mentions Carl Jung's idea of active imagination fitting with this idea as
well.
Or
Chris Chan, where the idea of it's all everything. Michael Birdio and Chris Chan, they're like this. My son, I can imagine a Sonic and a Pikachu hybrid. So, that's in the ontic sphere, man. It's right there. It's all real and out there in the dimensions. I can't remember what the hell my Chris Chan lore is.
I'm just going to find that thing of him going like, whatever, we all cast spells.
Lots of us have cursed people. Anyway, that's already so much to chew. And it's like, these are just, it's not that they're completely unrelated, but there's not like a steady flow, because then we go into like the Zetherian currents of the idea of these sort of celestial planetary forces that are sort of related to the Aeon of Horus and Thelema and things like that, and how those planetary powers need to be placed in union with the earthly spirits of the Loa and things like that. And then he talks radionics and Shinto and this and that and
the Mion,
which
In fact, you know what? Fuck it, because I can't describe the Mion any better than he does, so we're going to put the little clip of him talking about the Mion right here.
The Mion, of course, is the opposite of being. It's a Greek word, Mion, but it's interesting that if you look at a very good biblical dictionary and encyclopedia, it's also a name of an ancient Canaanite city in Palestine, which was inhabited by worshippers of the goddess Ishtar in one of her manifestations. And it's very important for us to see not only the category of non-being as otherness, but in many ways as a threatening breakthrough into our own consciousness from our own id or unconscious levels of mind. The Mayon, therefore, is otherness, and it can be, could, or I should say, frequently is something different when you have two or more things combined.
Are you confused? Just a bit?
And it's all slammed into this absolute tome, and it's one of those that if you like it, you... like it can do a lot. It can give you, sometimes it's cool to just flip through and look at some of it without reading it as a whole and just get sort of inspired a little bit. I've gone back and forth. When I first read it, it was, I just didn't give a shit. It was like, man, what the fuck is this dreck?
Well, tell you what, like, I think this is probably the perfect encapsulation of it in my mind, right? This is a book that, It's what, like 600, almost 700 pages?
Sure.
There are equal parts simple Robert Anton Wilson type exercises for you to perform. There are breakdowns of systems of numerology and language. And then there are things like the artist as magician and the artist as deity, the work of Hiroyuki Futaka.
I told you to stop talking about Japanese pro wrestling. You're trying to sneak it in.
Well, I'm just saying, like, this is a man, this book, this ostensibly a workbook, something that, and at least for,
well,
most
this
of
is
us,
not
I
a,
feel like it's
I hate to say it, this is not a workbook.
No,
this
not at not all.
A, this
not
is
at
not
all.
A, this is not a course that you get through. This is a collection of very far out there fringe ideas that loop together and double back on each other in strange ways. It's not like it's just throwing shit into a book. But this isn't like a point A to point B progression at all.
No, yeah, and the there's four different sections of it. And to be honest, like, they're all connected within the sections, of course, but he could have split this up into several different books and it might have been more digestible for the average person.
Part of me wonders, because this was his first real work, maybe he just says, like, I better put everything in here because I might not ever get to write another
maybe
one.
Maybe I'll be dead before I get another one, so let's just get it all out there. But overall, the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook it's better than Lieber Knoll in certain ways, because Lieber Knoll, and specifically, like, Lieber K and stuff like that kind of things, like, you know, these, they give you a path to follow, and when you come out the other side, then you can kind of do whatever you want. Whereas the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook lays at your feet so many fantastic ideas, so much that once you get through it, you're already so far gone.
It really is a wild ride, and you could pick one chapter out of it and probably have something that would keep you busy for an extended period. And, you know, we already said it. I really do think that the the best part of the book is really right in like the first 50 pages or so, because it'll lay out like these family of Loas and all these things like that. And if you do the work, it'll be neat, because like other ghosts and spirits will pop up and you'll be able to fit them into these families, or maybe one of them will say like, nah, I'm a totally different thing. But then also you can go hunting for these, because they all got names. So at the bare minimum, you got somewhere to start with of like, all right, let me go see what the transvections are about.
I'm partial towards the last section of the book, because he goes deep into the ideas of the ontic sphere. And that's, again, that's where you get like the magician as artist, and I think that stuff's very fascinating.
Yeah, but that's all stuff for nerds. I want to be a werespider.
So, talking the second book now?
There's, and let's keep in mind, there's what, six books between this and... I'm just tossing out a number, honestly. It's all... There's
too fucking many.
Yeah, this man has written all kinds
What's even wilder to me is that he has... like esoteric channeled works. You know, he's got like, you know, Book of the Law Crowley type shit that has just never been published. You see quotes of it all throughout his books, but it's like you gotta go talk to Michael Burdio and get the laying of hands and the touching of butt to get the magic books, I guess.
Here's the one that I want to talk about is the one that we mentioned previously, Ontological Graffiti, because it's, in a way, this feels like his opus. This is like his, like, especially the version I've got, because it's huge. It's got all this artwork crammed into it. And this man does, like I said, very raw, sort of primitive art. But it's really, if it's your jam, it's your jam. I really think this thing is great. And it's just full of all of these very disparate ideas of, like, it starts off talking about Sophia and relating things back again to, like, ancient Egypt type magic, stuff like that. And then, like, there's a chapter about the great god Pan, and then how that relates to a ritual that is laid out to make people into vampires. And then there's future spirits. Those are all really neat. Let's talk about the transpersonal id and how you can do a better form of therapy through radionics. But also, we need to talk about the Abramelin rituals. And it's, again, it's one of those things that I feel
like... And here's
like
an entire, like, 20 pages that is me talking to a spirit during a seance.
Yeah, and it's a lot of these are like, hey, here's just the minutes of the various seances and spiritualism activities we were doing, of, like, Q&As with ghosts. We talked to Crowley's ex-wife. I'm not even kidding. That's an actual part. Hold on. For the sake of argument, tell me when to stop.
Bam.
All right. Right here, we're in the middle of a seance where it's laying out how this sort of neo-spiritualism is at the root of modern Gnosticism, which I guess makes sense. But it's a ghost explaining how talking to ghosts is a very important part. The big good angel of voodoo. That was a word I had to read. Those are certainly words, and you can put them in whatever combination you want. At the bare minimum, I won't pretend that I've gotten through the entirety of this thing, because I've had other stuff I've been trying to read. Perhaps Burdio is not somebody who is meant to be fully understood or made into a historical footnote. This is not a history club or a nostalgia tour. But if you want to find things that maybe it won't give, maybe not power, but certainly inspiration and good times, one of the best things you can do is just dive head first until you can't stomach it, or you find something that's so off the wall, you're like, I gotta go try this.
I got a Burdio quote that I think sums up my feelings on the subject.
Sure.
Each magician must determine for himself his own grimoire. But this is only possible after such a person has advanced very far in the magical disciplines. He must be able to translate himself literally into a grimoire. He must be able to make a grimoire as his own image. In the same way we understand the Bible says that God made man in his own image. All other magical work fails unless we are able to use this principle. In hindsight, while editing this, I remembered another quote that I definitely should have gone with instead of the one I read you. So I'm going to give it to you here right now. My intention is not to carry on the same work continuously or have others do this. This is a point missed by many readers of the workbook. Instead, I do exactly what Hector did for me. I show individual occultists how to solve problems and construct pictures of their own universe. I am giving you materials for books to write yourself. If that doesn't drill home the point we're getting at, I don't know what else will. I think what Birdio is giving you, more than anything, is the grounds and the ability to create your own system. Birdio doesn't want you... I mean, maybe he does. Maybe he's just trying to be a huckster here. But what I think at his best, what Birdio wants you to do is read his books and develop these systems and then go make your own shit. Birdio wants you to look at the fantastic, the imaginative, the creative, and the absolutely groundbreaking and earth-shattering things that he's created and to tell you that, yeah, you can do this too, buddy. Get to it. And the ones that suck at it, then you can just keep doing your voodoo all day, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the proper inspiration that you can get from people like Kenneth Grant, from people like Michael Birdio, and from people like Castaneda and Lovecraft and Morrison, you know, everyone we've done a special on, is that these are people that are not giving you a new world, you know? They are not saying, here is the way that you're going to be from now on. I think if you're doing...
Just go become a Christian or some shit, if that's what you want.
Yeah, sure. But instead, what they do is that they're offering these new vistas, these new images and ideas and symbols and things like that that are coming out from a deep... Whether it's, we took this from Lovecraft and we recontextualized it, or we're showing you techniques that can break the automatic apprehension of the world and find new ways to change your perception so that you can find something that you haven't seen or experienced before, or delving deep into your own personal creative energies and pulling something out. I guess there's the Jung quote about, like, people will do anything no matter how absurd to avoid facing their own soul, because, you know, the end of that quote is because people don't think that anything good can come from them. But maybe people like Birdio and their works show that we all have a cosmos inside of us that we can pull out, you know? You get some parts from other people, you mix them together, you find something new, and you build something that can stand on its own, that can be as wild and crazy as you can think. And in fact, the universe itself is probably wild and stranger than you can think. So you might as well go for it. Now, whether that means trying to get past all of the hokey nonsense and getting to the core of what you think like an effective magic practice is, or whether it's really immersing yourself in a deeply personal, invented, magical way of going about things, I can't say, but I do still, regardless of his, you know, the cultural appropriation, the complete misrepresentation of voodoo, the false lineages, and the overall gross behavior, I still think there's a lot of really cool stuff you can get out of Birdio's work. Am I missing anything, you think?
No, I agree entirely. I think we're very much on the same wavelength here. I think what Birdio is good for, and what all the people we've talked about in these specials and most of what we're talking about on the show are always about, is that same old drum that I go back to over and over again. Disclosing new and fantastic ways of being. New understandings of being. And more so than anyone, I think Birdio, if you truly take some time to look at what Birdio is giving you, you can't help but come away from that with this fantastic sense of not only finding, not only having new ways of being revealed to you, but being an active creative part of that. And I think that's what's most important about Birdio. Fuck the goofiness of whether or not the OTOA is real, and if he's doing something right or wrong with voodoo, you know, whether or not he kissed that dude on the mouth or not. Just fuck all of that. The important part of Birdio is that if you really look at it, if you really go through these ideas that he's presenting, if you do the work that he's laying out to you, you're going to come away with something that is so fundamentally different inside of you. And if that hasn't been your goal with magic, then God damn it, it should have been.
And well, the last thing I can say is that we have still barely scratched the surface on all of the things that Birdio has talked about. And
I'm not summarizing 650 pages. Go buy a book. Go read the book.
But is there any particular methods or things like that Birdio had that you find particularly useful? That like, it's like, oh man, this was a really great thing that I wish I had done sooner or I had known sooner.
I just think his approach to being able to simultaneously combine so many disparate ideas into something that's coherent is what I found most useful. I like the way he talks about the ego and the id and the transpersonal id and the transcendent ego, like all of those sorts of aspects. And then also talking about like, well, yeah, but also it's like closing your eyes and connecting with the ontic sphere and pulling in the entirety of the cosmos through your meditation. Just like those sorts of random things just feels so simple yet so inexhaustible.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that.
What about you?
You already know, like, personally, I'm an artsy guy. I won't say that I'm super talented, but I really enjoy making art.
Stop being humble.
There are people that are much better than me. I think I'm much closer to Birdio's hairy caveman art than I am to somebody like a Steffi Grant. But I especially in ontological graffiti, the name itself comes from that sort of relation of this divinely inspired art as the symbols and the showing the map. It's the cartography for these new spiritual avenues, and to the point where he even discusses these paintings as the portals into sacred and spiritual and magical zones or whatever. And just the way he talks about it in this book really did a lot for me. And I've noticed that the longer I've been involved in magic, I've gone a lot from trying to find something that fit the motif that I was going for in terms of symbolism or artwork or whatever. And now I make a lot of my stuff. I'm staring at not one, not two, but at least five different pieces of art that are on or right next to my working altar, which is right across the room. So that's a really easy one, but I've always found the relationship of art and magic to be, art is magic and magic is an art, I guess. And Birdio, if not filtered, not always edited the very, very best, or curated in ways that are conducive to illustrating an idea, but this sort of raw creative force that he's got can really get you going. And I think that if you allow yourself to tap into that kind of like raw creative force, it's like art. Your art doesn't have to be good. It has to be significant to you, at least. It may, you know, nobody else doesn't have to mean shit to anybody else, but if you can tap into it and pull out something from within, you know, you will find that you have created a very useful tool for your practice.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I also have a soft spot for Birdio because like Birdio, I too am a heavily philosophical minded individual. You know, Burry, you know, I held back so much Heidegger on the shit, but that motherfucker talking about ontic spheres, beings in the world, all sorts of shit. It is, you can tell this man has read Heidegger, Hegel, just all sorts of people all the time. And it's,
and he was like, I can sell
like
this.
Nothing. Yeah, exactly.
I'll put this in there for the dorks. They'll love it. And you see, and I have a soft spot for him too, because I too am a fake voodoo man. And you too can be a fake voodoo person if you sign up to our Patreon.
I said, make me a voodoo man, but the voodoo man just kept voodooing. All right. Well, with that,
this has been Chaos Magic News.
The only podcast that can trace its lineage all the way back to the original Haitian OTO.
If you, too, would like to be a big fake huckster or possibly get hustled, you could always go to chaosmagicnews.com, where we'll find the occasional article, links to the pod, and links to our illustrious, ever-present interview series with exciting people like Michael Bertio, if you send him this episode and he wants to talk to us.
But if you can't get that, then of course you could go find some spicy memes over on the social medias. We're on pretty much every single one of them: Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Facebook. It's all at Chaos Magic News.
And if you want a more personal experience with us, you could check out the Chaos Magic News Discord, where do we want to do the housekeeping announcements?
We were going to propose some interesting changes to things around here, but we've decided against it. So we just ignore all of this, and we're going to tell you should go join the Patreon if you want more of us, because what else are you going to get? Exclusive content from us, unedited, full barrel, coming right at your face.
I feel like there should be a joke about that, but I couldn't possibly think what to do.
Yeah, I can't think of jokes about things going in your face at all. Oh, well. I guess it's a very serious topic. You also help support the objectively best occult podcast on the internet today. And if you just needed one more reason to join that Patreon, well, you would also get your name read.
Ooh, can I read them this time?
Yeah, if you want.
Okay. Where's the... Hold on. Give me the list.
I don't... Oh, God.
Give me the list.
I don't have the list.
What do you... So... Oh, what? You were going to, what, read it later?
I do it by memory.
No.
Here you go.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Obsbleck. Thank you, Andrea WK. Thank you, Pope Loki Sater the 23rd LLC. Thank you, Local. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Cios 93. Thank you, Alexander. Thank you, Coco. Thank you, Cursed T. Thank you, Fyodor. Thank you, Venus Christ. Thank you, Acolyte One of the Ice Magic Meditation Society. Thank you, DD Destruction. Thank you, Tangy Darling. Thank you, Sylv. Thank you, Michael Tremov. Thank you, Bearded Vegan. Thank you, Cece. And thank you, Toziel.
And also thank you to the Lavender Ghost and Tommy Kelly, who have joined in the time since we recorded this episode.
That's right. You are all just the absolute best.
I'm gonna send a voodoo Loa to go kiss you on the forehead, every single one of you.
And we look forward to seeing you in the next episode.
We look forward to reading your name next time, listener.
Ah, there you go. That's the one. Well, I guess with all of that said,
you want the last word? You've earned it. You've taken way too long.
You know, come on. No, I got a good one. We're not an academic sewing circle. We are not some kind of magical hug box. We are concerned with podcasting and good times. And the rest of you guys, you're gonna be like some sodomized no talkie people. How about that?
The fuck was that?
Isn't mute like a bad term now?
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We will
see
you next time.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Can you, like, move your mic just, like, a little bit closer to you?
I jumped the gun. I'm sorry.
Can you just move your mic? Slap.
There.